With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, are archived on our website at recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this time we're going to talk about attention-grabbing behavior, kind of the disruption of it and what to do about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that our first question is going to be, what is it? What is attention-seeking behavior? What are we talking about? What kind of behavior is that? And I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. And let's see. Pradita has a really good one. He says that attention-seeking behavior is interrupting somebody else's turn. Yeah, we talk about taking turns, actually, quite a bit on this show. Just like grammar school, we're supposed to take turns when we speak, when we state our opinion, so we don't all talk at once and kind of talk over each other. And yes, very common, and we get a lot of agreement, it's a very common attention-seeking behavior to interrupt when someone else is speaking and not let them get their full remarks out. Yeah, look at me, I want to talk. I don't want them to talk. Yeah, interrupting someone else's turn, their turn to speak, not ours, not somebody else's. Yeah, and to go with that, Gordon or others are saying not only interrupting someone else's turn, but also ignoring the speaking guidelines. And we've spoken about having even written, but if not even stated at the beginning of a session, what the guidelines are for speaking, how long you can speak. Guidelines for civility, really, that you have to be civil. You can't be rude. You can't use bad language. You can't yell at someone. Mm-hmm. Ignoring the speaking guidelines would certainly be a rather obnoxious attention-seeking behavior, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Abriel and others are saying that they think that the written statement of civility doesn't apply to them. The written statement of civility doesn't apply to them. And, of course, that really is what the written guidelines are, isn't it? They're written statements of civility, how to act, how to be polite to each other. And, you know, people sometimes say, well, that's obvious. It's obvious that you're supposed to act in a civil manner. Yeah, I suppose it is obvious, but in that case, people sometimes ignore it. Yeah, it's either not obvious to them, which is why we state it up front, or they choose to ignore it. And it's important if you see that civility is not being followed. It's rather contagious, isn't it? If you allow someone, yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement with that. If you allow someone to be uncivil to someone else, and to grab their turn or to be attention-seeking in a belligerent manner, then other people will try it too, right? Because, well, it seems the way to get attention. So that must be quashed immediately. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are in charge. We are either third-party impartial or the leader or the person who is doing the seminar, the workshop, the mediation, whatever it is. And I stop that right away. I plan on may say that that is unacceptable behavior. And we are not going to tolerate that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people get embarrassed. You know, if you come right out and say it, it's like being the teacher, right? People are going, well, it's like being you're treating them like children. Yes, because they're acting like children. Yeah. So the written statement of civility doesn't apply to them, but it does. Mm-hmm. And ignoring the guidelines. You know, Craig and others are saying that also not only are they ignoring the guidelines and interrupting, but they're interrupting to argue and not let a different viewpoint be heard. Interrupting to argue and not let a different viewpoint be heard. Yes, what they're doing is they're fighting. They want to have only their viewpoint heard. You know, sometimes people are agreeing. You know, I was getting some examples where people are just, they want the attention, me, and they're not even disagreeing with the person that's talking. They've just gotten all excited and they want to say it better or to chime in and say, yes, me too. You see, they're not necessarily arguing even. They're not even necessarily on the other side. But they're grabbing someone else's turn and they want the attention of the group to be centered upon them at all times. And we are equal in our groups. We like everybody's opinion. We like to know what everybody thinks. Right? And so, yes, sometimes they're interrupting to argue and not let a different viewpoint be heard. But sometimes they're actually agreeing. They're just grabbing someone else's spot. You see? And we wait our turn even though we might indeed be agreeing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can nod our head and stuff like that and go, yeah. But to really attention grab like that is not civil, even if it is in agreement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting a lot of examples like that. Thank you for all of your participation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can interrupt to argue. You can also interrupt to help, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Karen and others are saying that attention-seeking behavior is ignoring or arguing with the timekeeper. We have spoken in prior shows, and if you want to hear prior shows, of course, the last five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And we've talked about timekeeping, and it's a good way to keep the process going, for one thing. Because some people, it's not really attention-grabbing behavior. They just don't know when to sit down and stop. They just keep talking. And, yeah, they're filibustering. That's kind of an Americanism. People are going, yeah, they're doing a filibuster. Sometimes, you know, this is a global show, and I think that's kind of an American idiom. But a filibuster is often used in government when a congressperson, you know, we have the Congress helps make the laws in the United States, and they get up and they just talk to take up time so no one else can broach their subject. And it is not considered to be a really fine thing, but it seems to be a congressional tactic that we are not going to allow. Yes, because we're not the Congress. So we have talked about having a timekeeper as somebody who keeps the time. I personally, and I know that I've said this before, I like to use a mechanical thing if we're going to need a certain time for everybody to speak. Usually that's when there's quite a few people in the room and everybody needs to voice their opinion. I actually use literally a kitchen timer. The reason being that you can't argue with it, as Karen says, ignoring or arguing with the timekeeper. And it's hard to ignore because it goes ding. And also, I usually hold up a little, you know, it's getting close, but you can see it. And then nobody feels that somehow the human keeping the time has shortchanged them, has given them less time than someone else. Yeah. So it's kind of like, well, everybody can see the thing is ticking down and you've got so much time left and then you're done until your next turn. Yeah. So I like to keep it mechanical, and that's just me. Yeah, this is an interesting point. Quite a few people are making it, Harley and others, and we've all seen this, that it's an attention-seeking behavior, and it's a disruptive behavior to speak loudly in a different, on a different topic to the person next to them. Mm-hmm. Speaking loudly on a different topic to the person next to them. It's disruptive. Everybody turns to listen. And then they're not listening to the person who has the floor, who has the right to be saying their opinion, to be voicing what we need to do. You know, speaking loudly on a different topic to the person next to them. It can be any topic, but it's usually something personal or something in the news or something, and people turn to listen. And then, worst of all, if you don't say, you know, we need to pay attention to this, if you don't stop that and have people redirect to the topics at hand, then other people, if it's an interesting topic that they're sidelining there, other people will start to discuss it too. They'll chime into that discussion, and you'll lose everybody's attention. Yeah. Let's see. Sarah says, yelling across the room for someone to agree with them. I've seen that too. Yeah. Especially if it's a relatively big group or a big room. Yelling across the room for someone to agree with them. You know, and this is a good point that Brian is making, this first similar to this, creating division amongst the participants. That's what somebody's trying to do when they're yelling across the room for somebody to agree with them. They're trying to create sides. They're trying to divide the participants up. They're trying to get allies, so to speak. But this isn't the moment to do such a thing. Yeah. Creating division amongst the participants. All of that happens. That's yelling across the room, and it's interrupting, and it's speaking on a different topic. See, it's dividing up the room. And no, we need to keep attention. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Elizabeth and others are saying that also, not only do you create a division by the yelling for someone to agree with you across the room and speaking different topic and like that, and this is really dividing. This is a very good point. You know, Brian said creating division amongst the participants, and others agreed. Speaking to someone in the group in a different language, that will divide. You have to ask everyone to, whatever the language is that we're commonly speaking amongst ourselves. You know, where I am, it would be English, because I'm in the United States. But, you know, it's not necessarily true. The groups that I do speak English, the reason being is I speak English. And it is basically speaking a common language that is spoken in the United States amongst business people and like that. But whatever the language is that the discussion is being held in, the main discussion on the topics at hand, that's the language we're all going to speak in this room. And we're not going to divide up and mutter to each other in a different language that no one else understands. No, that's incredibly disruptive and attention-grabbing. And it makes for division amongst the participants. We're going to ask everyone to speak our common language, even when they're talking amongst themselves. We can all know what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, George is making a good point, and others that's very similar, talking on the phone in a different language. That's attention grabbing too. Mm-hmm. And then people wonder what you're saying. And then some people in the room speak that language, and some people don't. And see, and that makes a division also. It's you're with me. We speak this language. No, you're with us as participants in this group that is heading for a successful outcome to their common goal. That's the key. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another good point that is being made by Cheryl and others, that is, thank you for all of your participation, that's very similar. Talking to a third party on the phone about what is being discussed. Yeah, the invisible third party that only the phone person can hear. Talking to a third party on the phone about what is being discussed. If that third party is very important to the discussion, to the group, to the participants, if that third party should be included, they're an expert, they're somebody who's done it before, there's somebody who's got a really valid opinion. That's what speakerphone is for, right? Right. And most new phones, most cell phones, have the speakerphone capacity. Someone has the speakerphone capacity in the room. And then we can include them if it's really, really necessary. And if it's not really, really necessary, then the people in the room need to talk to each other. And one of us doesn't need to talk to somebody the rest of us can't talk to. Mm-hmm. That's what the speakerphone is for, unless we don't need to do that. But either way, and I hesitate to include people on this. Well, you know, okay, it makes a start. Now, maybe you have, I'm going to say the words that you all say that I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on your group. And it depends who's being talked to on the phone. And it depends, you know how the expression Pandora's box? It is, I don't, it's kind of an Americanism, but there's an old tale. Pandora opened, it's a myth, I think. If Pandora opened a mythical box with all the problems of the world and they all escaped because she couldn't help herself and she opened the box. And it makes a... And it means that if you start something, if you open up that ability, if you open up the idea that someone can include someone on the phone as a participant, you may be opening it up to doing it lots, and that's not desirable. Because the person who is not actually sitting there and hasn't really been invited, somebody invited them by talking to them on the phone. Really, you'd have to really think hard about whether you should ask them to discuss the matter with this person later. Well, let's discuss it together now, you see. That would be my first choice. Although people are arguing that, thank you for all your participation, are arguing that it's good to have everybody included. I'm going to say it depends. It depends who the person is, and it depends on the situation at the time. That is a judgment call. Mm-hmm. Alan and others are mentioning the making of rude noises. Clicking of the tongue type rude noises. You know, the tisk tisk type thing. Yeah. Ooh, some of you have actually had people boo, make bad noises, go boo and cheer and like that and clap. Yeah, that's attention-grabbing, not in a good way, even if it's enthusiastic. Let's try to keep the partisanship down when we do a group because we're all together as a team. Mm-hmm. Now, I see we've got quite a bit of, I'm going to call it physical attention-grabbing tactics that people are talking about. Thank you for all of your participation. Not just the interrupting ones, but kind of physical stuff that is disruptive and attention-grabbing and inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Una and others are talking about people roll their eyes and sigh while someone's making a presentation or a point. Mm-hmm. They roll their eyes and just sigh. Well, yeah. In fact, we've got a whole slew of stuff that people have seen, people done, that kind of repetitive acts, and really they're done to draw attention to the person that's doing them, yes, but really they are disruptive because they are drawing attention from the rightful speaker, from the person who is entitled, because it's their turn, to speak, to make a point, to voice an opinion. Yeah. So I'm going to call these physical. They kind of are. That's the rolling of the eyes and sighing. We've got gum snapping is mentioned quite a bit. People make a noise with their mouth when they chew the gum. They kind of snap it. Ever hear anybody do that? Make that kind of a poppy sound? It is. It's disruptive. Uh-huh. We have gums. We've got a whole bunch of stuff. Gum snapping and pen twirling. I once saw somebody could really do it. It was very distracting because they did it with all of their fingers kind of up and back like a, I don't know, like a snake or something. You know what I mean? In between. Very strange. Pen clicking. Mm-hmm. Finger drumming. Oh, yeah. The sign, the ultimate sign of boredom. People seen humming. Yeah. Kind of low humming. People going humming of a certain, like a catchy tune so that people get it in their mind. You know how that happens if somebody's kind of humming a tune and then it sticks in your mind and it's distracting and annoying and it keeps your attention away from the speaker and then everybody thinks, now where did I hear that tune? What kind of a tune is it? You know, when it gets your attention away from the speaker, right? People going patriotic songs. People hum patriotic songs. Uh-huh. Rustling of stuff, rustling of paper. Rustling of change. Mostly men have that in their pocket. I've got several people voting for someone digging in their briefcase or their purse and kind of taking stuff out and putting it all over the place while they're looking for their imaginary thing. Yeah, that's all good. Yeah, all very distracting. Yeah. So these are all what I would call physical things that people do so that you're distracted from the speaker and you're thinking about, well, you're thinking about the attention grabber. You're thinking about them. Mm-hmm. Ah, Joan and others, this seems to be popular too, passing pictures around on a cell phone. Look at that. And then they nudge the person next to them and they show them the picture of, well, I don't know, whatever it's a picture of, their grandchildren, their pet, a funny cartoon or whatever, a little video or something. Well, video would make noise. That would be even worse. Yeah, they pass it around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Sunoco and others are saying not only the cell phone, because nowadays we've got all kinds of stuff on our cell phone, but passing around a computer notebook with trivia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, quite a few people nowadays have, somebody in the room probably has one, a notebook, one of those computer notebooks. Yeah. Yes, people are very agreeing that they've seen people pass around a joke, which is really distracting, right? Because then you have to bother to read it or look at it, and then everybody laughs when they see it, and then they pass it along. And then you're waiting for your turn to go and see the funny thing. And it takes, what, a minute to get the funny thing in your head when you've got it. And this is very, and nobody's paying attention to the speaker anymore because they want to see it. Mm-hmm. Let's see, jokes, editorials. Yeah, that would take some reading, too. And biased opinions show up on the notebooks that get passed around. Very good point. Mm-hmm. So now we've talked about all kinds of, well, attention-seeking bad things that participants do, especially when someone who doesn't agree with their viewpoint has the floor. Mm-hmm. Because really what it is, it's not only attention-seeking, I would like to be the center of attention, but it takes the attention away from someone who rightfully should have it, someone who's got the ability, the time, the floor, so to speak, someone who's allowed to talk. Mm-hmm. or do something, make some sort of presentation. So what can we do about it? What are we going to do about this kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, yes, a lot of people are saying we need to redirect group attention. I actually do. Oh, some of you actually use a Well, all right. I'm going to say it depends again. It depends. I've got quite a few people who are using a sound maker to redirect attention. By doing it, you make attention to you, the leader, the third party impartial, whatever we are, and away from the distraction. Mm-hmm. Now, I actually, sometimes I do this, so I can't say that it's a bad thing. It depends on the circumstances. I don't actually take people using a whistle. That's an attention, come back to attentiveness to the group type thing, or a gong, or a gavel, which is very, very popular and very traditional. Yeah, to bang a gavel, to one of those little round hammery type things that you bang on a piece of wood. Yes, I actually own a gavel. I've used it occasionally. They use it in courtrooms. Mm-hmm. To get everyone's attention back. And I think it's a real good idea. A gavel, well, I think a whistle's a little bit harsh, but then again, it might not be. It depends how big the room is. Mm-hmm. Oh, you meant, okay. Some of the people, thank you for all of your participation. Michael and others who said whistle meant the kind, not the kind that you have in your hand that's silver in color, but the end is used for, used against muggers. No, but the kind that you make with your mouth where you put your fingers in your mouth and you whistle really loud, right? Yeah. I don't do that for the simple reason is that I don't know how. So it's kind of like, I don't know how to do that. And I'm not sure that I could if I didn't know how. And but some sort of an implement to get people's attention turned back towards the issues at hand. I personally like a gavel, and I do think that if you're not going to drag your gavel all over the place with you, that hitting a glass with a spoon is kind of the social equivalent. Mm-hmm. Seen people do that where you hit the glass with a spoon. Yeah, it's something to get the attention to me so that we can redirect back to the process and not towards whatever it was. Uh-huh. Ray and others are saying to enlist peer pressure to prevent presentation interruptions. Depends on the group. It depends on whether the people that the person respects, because peer pressure requires that you want to conform. It depends if the people who are truly the person's peers think it's funny that they're interrupting. I've seen that too. Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with peer pressure. I think it's good. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the leader can assert peer pressure. In fact, I suppose that's really what you're doing when you embarrass someone because they've acted in an uncivil manner. Mm-hmm. Let's see. George and others are saying you can have a set timetable for scheduled speakers. Good point. So when you so that everyone has an appointment and you will be overstepping everyone's time to speak if you keep interrupting. Hmm. I don't generally do this primarily because we're having a discussion and it's hard to know when you're going to talk. However, it's a real good idea to schedule like appointments when everyone can speak, when it's like a sequence, if everyone's making a presentation. Mm-hmm. And then you know when you're up. You know to get your stuff together. Mm-hmm. And also, especially if there's going to be like a PowerPoint or something where everybody has their set time to do it and we're all prepared for it. And yes, if you have a timetable and you have what I'm going to indeed call appointments, a set how long people can speak and when who's the next person, then if someone is attention-grabbing and disrupting, they're hurting everybody's time. And that's when peer pressure is good. Yes, good point. Nansen and others are saying that if you've got someone passing around electronic devices and that's the disruption, after you bang the gavel or hit the glass or whatever you're doing to get everyone's attention, you can confiscate the devices or you can confiscate them at the beginning. People are advocating asking people to give you their phone, their computer, their notebook. I have a rule that you turn the ringer off and put it away. Generally speaking, turn it off, not off, but turn the ringer off and put it away with most groups is pretty effective. Now, it depends if you see that it's not the right kind of a group and people are sneaking it and they can't help themselves and they're addicted to their electronic thing and they keep going into their backpack or something and keep looking at it. You can see the light. Then you might have to make the rule of leave it at the door, kind of like weapons. But, yes, to not give people the ability to do such a thing, confiscate it. You know, this is an interesting point Quentin and others are making. Thank you for all of your participation. He says that you can physically isolate the distractor from the group. Depends on the group. Depends on, I suppose, really the venue, too. I mean, what are you going to do, put them in a cage? No, you cannot do that. That is uncivil. We've got all kinds of recommendations here that really are not very civil. No, you cannot, if somebody's acting uncivilly, you cannot act uncivilly in return. Okay? Yes. I suppose even I have done that if you get desperate to have someone participate only through video conferencing or through Skype or something like that so that you can control their interruptions. Does that make sense? You kind of get the pause button on it. Physically isolate the distractor from the group. It's an idea, but you'd have to do it very carefully and very civilly. You know, Mark and others are making a point. You can always announce, and this goes to peer pressure and to the concept of making a schedule. You can announce how much time is being wasted by this individual. Kind of point it out and embarrass them, assuming that wasn't their goal. It kind of embarrassed them into acting in a more civil manner. Yeah. You know, Lydia and others are saying that the really key to it is to embarrass the transgressor immediately. Point it out and say that that's not how we act. And, you know, sometimes you have to kind of act indeed like a grammar school teacher. I know that seems kind of strange. And we're all adults in the room. But sometimes adults don't act very adult-like. And sometimes, you know, this is a good point that's being made. We are speaking as though the person who is disrupting, the person who's attention-grabbing, is doing it deliberately. It's a plot. It's a tactic. It's something that they're doing to slow the process, to distract attention from the person who is rightfully speaking. And we're acting as though that's deliberate. And most of the time, I suspect it is. But, you know, some people don't realize it. It's just their nature. They're kind of know-it-alls. Yeah. And it's their nature to kind of interrupt and to have a better idea and to get all excited that, no, this is the way and like that. And they need to be reminded, they need to be told that we need to let everyone have their turn. Everyone gets a chance, that all opinions are valued and considered. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's not deliberate, and that's the ones who you can kind of, well, you can't be uncivil, but kind of embarrass them and go, oh, well, that's not the way we act. You kind of do the grammar school thing on them. And, yes, Donald and others, and this is truly what Recipe for Peace Now, of course, advocates. If you've got someone who is being disruptive, who is being uncivil, who is doing something that is attention-grabbing away from the topics, away from the process, away from our goal, you can call a timeout. And the reason that Recipe for Peace Now, the reason that we think that a timeout should have food is because, and what we do is we do like a potluck in the room. And the reason being, not because the people are hungry. Now, it's true it might be dinner time, and you might be hungry. But really, it is really, the food is really a tool. It's a way to diffuse a situation. It's a way to get people from the formal gathering to a more informal, more spread out gathering, because we kind of take it and we wander off. It is a way for the leader to privately speak with the person who is attention grabbing and get them not to do that, to speak with the group that's attention grabbing, especially people are speaking in a different language and like that. You have to talk to them and say, you know, remember not to, because it's distracting and it's disrespectful to the rest of us. Mm-hmm. So you have to put it in terms that people can agree to and understand and not be insulted by. And the ability to speak privately with people is one of the, well, privately in the room, but is one of the one-on-one. We're not going to call it privately, because that implies that it's secret from the other participants, and it's not. But it's like one-on-one to make certain that when we come back to the more formal-ish process, I'm not much on being around an actual table and like that, but even so, we could even take food with us. When we come back to the real negotiation, to the topics, to the discussion, whatever the bad behavior was, it won't happen again. Mm-hmm. And if it does, you can like give a gentle reminder, oh yeah, that's not supposed to do that. You see? So it's very neat. Yes. And people asking, yes, thank you for all of your participation. We are indeed headed towards the recipe part. And I know that I say this exact, well, not the exact, because it's not scripted. None of this show is scripted. It goes according to your questions. It's rather organic. But I say the same basic thing each time. You want to know this. It's at, the last five shows are at our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. But I say this every time because it's so important. If you're going to have people over for food, so to speak, we're all going to bring something or whatever, you need to find out and communicate to everyone if any of the participants have a food allergy, a food prohibition, or religious prohibition to food. You don't want to some sort of food. You don't want anyone to have a bad time and get sick. No, very important. Also, when people bring something, ask them to please label it. Not what it is, meatloaf. No, what is in it, so that we can make a judgment as to whether or not we can eat it. Also, I truly think that the leader, which is usually us, should bring a little extra. You never know, people bring kind of scant. And I guess it's my fetish because I hate running out of food. Makes for a bad experience. And also, I think that we should have a safe recipe on hand. Now, what's a safe recipe? Well, doesn't have too many ingredients. The ingredients would be known to your people who are the participants. And, you know, I'm in the United States. My ingredients might be different than yours, but it would be ingredients that you're pretty sure that everybody has eaten before, knows about. It's not a surprise. and you have already checked about food allergies, food prohibitions, and religious prohibitions, and you don't think that it violates any of them. But we're still going to label it, right? What's in it? So, today our safe recipe is going to be a chicken, a stir-fried chicken. Now, we've had stir-fries before on this show, and I really like stir-fries, especially because they don't travel all that well once they're cooked, but especially if you've got facilities, if you've got a stove and a refrigerator for the materials and like that. I think it's really good and team building to cook together. Now, okay, people argue with me that it's not really cooking together. It's having somebody demonstrate it, which is true, but it still makes us do something together that's fun. And then everybody gets to eat it. Well, how can that be more fun than that? So I think stir fries are really great to make together. I'm not big on having the group prep it. I come with it all prepared in little pots, so to speak, the little Rubbermaid pots with the little lids. You know what I mean? Whatever it is that you've got, you can stick it in a bowl. But I like to prep the food, the pieces, cut it, so that it's all chopped or whatever it is I need, and all divided up and all washed and stuff. And just put it together as a group and then serve it. Mm-hmm. Now, you can make a stir fry in a big pot, in a big skillet. You don't need a wok. I happen to own one just because it's kind of cool, and I do this a lot. But anything that's got even heat and can be heated up fairly high will do it. You just need enough room for the ingredients is the key to this. So, this is the stir-fried chicken. We are indeed going to make a whole bunch of rice that goes with it, of course, and have it on the side so that people can take as much or as little as they would like, whatever kind of rice you like. And, yes, people are asking about different types, whatever you like. You like brown, you like white, you like little vegetables in it, whatever you like. Mm-hmm. So here's the stir-fried chicken. We're going to have 6 boneless, skinless chicken breasts. It's about a couple of pounds of chicken. If you don't, see, that's something that's easily available to me. And cheap. If it's not easily available to you, whatever kind of chicken you can get that's nice and it's fresh. But I'm going to cut mine into strips just because it looks pretty, and the chicken breasts do that. It's easy. You're using a whole chicken. You've got all kinds of pieces. Make cubes. Make pieces of chicken, right? Right. 3 tablespoons of cornstarch because we're going to need to thicken a little. A couple tablespoons of soy sauce. Just the prepared soy sauce is what I use. A half teaspoon or so of ground ginger, the fresh kind, please, if you can possibly get it. Mm-hmm. You can use ginger powder, too, if you need to. It's really for the flavor, but the fresh gives it such a nice extra taste to it. Mm-hmm. Let's mince up a garlic clove, put it in there. People say I use a lot of garlic. If you think that's too much, then don't. Let's have 4 tablespoons of oil. We're going to divide it up because we're going to need it 2 times. A nice green pepper, devein, de-seed, chop up nice and small, nice even small pieces. And so what we're doing is we're trying to make it look pretty too. Let's have some celery. Well, you know what? Let's use a red pepper. I think a red pepper and a green pepper look really nice. And as long as we're using pepper, it'll make it more evenly cut too. So let's use a nice red pepper. Also, we're going to chop it up into even, well, not even, but to smallish pieces. Mm-hmm. And devein and, of course, de-seed it. And let's have an onion that we're going to slice. Well, we could chop it. Let's chop the onion. Looks prettier. And a cup of chicken broth. Yeah. So we're going to take our chicken and we're going to coat it with the flour, with the cornstarch. Mm-hmm. What we're going to, I think the best thing to do with this, people do this all different kinds of ways, but we're going to actually add the soy sauce and the ginger, and we're going to add it to the chicken right now with the cornstarch. I think the easiest thing to do is to put it in a plastic bag. put the chicken and the cornstarch first so you get the cornstarch all around. And then you're going to add the soy sauce and the ginger right to the bag and shake the whole thing around. Mm-hmm. We're kind of marinating this because we're going to stick it back in the fridge because I don't like to leave chicken out. You can leave it out, but I'm always suspicious of it. Put it back in the fridge for about an hour. You don't need it even that long. It's just so that the whole thing kind of blends together a little bit. Now, we're going to put half of our oil, two tablespoons, in our skillet or our wok or whatever. We're going to heat up real high, and we're going to stir fry the chicken that was in the bag. We're going to squish it all out, the ginger and the soy and everything, kind of squeeze the bag into the pot. I think you can probably get it all stir-fried at once, if not do it in two times. Put it on a plate, do it another time. But you want to get it all cooked all the way around. It takes about 5 minutes. It smells nice. You're doing it in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. You can get this all in one wok, one big skillet, because you're stir-frying it all the way around. It smells real nice with the ginger and the soy sauce already. Mm-hmm. Now, you can either push this to the side, depending on how big a pot you've got, or take it out and put it on a plate, the chicken, because now we're going to put the remaining oil in there, and we're going to stir-fry the peppers and the onion. Mm-hmm. And what? About a few minutes? 4 minutes? 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. Just stir-fry all the vegetables. Now we're going to add the broth. We're going to return the chicken to the pan. And we're going to cook it and stir it until the whole thing is thickened and nice and bubbly. Because, you know, that cornstarch and everything on the chicken, it's going to make the broth kind of get thicker. And everything's going to cook and be bubbly. Yeah, I know. People are saying that's a lot of liquid for the stir fry. That kind of depends how you feel about it. You don't need the whole cup, maybe. You might want to put it in a little more gradually and see how you're doing. I find that when you've got the peppers and the chicken and like that, it kind of makes it thick. And it kind of gives it an extra moisture to it. Otherwise, the chicken's liable to dry out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, there we've got it. It hasn't taken very long. What is this? This is about, if you've got everything, you come with the bag of chicken that you've already marinated, and everything's cut up and everything, so you're making it in front of everyone. It takes 10 minutes. Delicious. Smells really good. We can chat while we're doing it. Yeah. Then everybody can have some. All good. I think stir fries are wonderful if you've got the facilities. And that's a very simple stir-fried chicken. You can modify as you see fit. You think that's a little too much liquid, you can revise it. Mm-hmm. But it's very delicious, and that is our safe recipe because it is ingredients that most people are not allergic to. You will find this out from your people and are familiar with. And you can do it together, which is kind of nice. It has nothing to do with being safe, but it's kind of nice if you have the facilities. It gives you one more level of bonding, of team making, so to speak. So I think that's always a good idea. So that's the safe recipe. Now let's go on to our adventure recipe. Now this is our adventure recipe because, first of all, it has ham and pork. Is something that not everyone eats or can eat. And that's the main thing. It's really got ham. You can substitute bacon, but that's the same thing. It's still ham, right? So that's why, because pork is sometimes questionable what people can have. So here we go. We've got about a tablespoon of oil. Let's give 4 or 5 stalks of celery that we're going to chop up kind of fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, give it a little chop straight through. A couple of onions, also chopped. Let's do a red pepper, devein and seed, and chop up. Green pepper, same thing, devein, seed, chop up. Yeah, I like a little vegetables in this. I think it's really nice. Two garlic cloves. Well, let's give them a nice fine chop also. Yeah, everything's equal. Now let's get about a pound of black-eyed peas, regular, not in a can. Now, if you're going to use canned, and let's face it, actually I am. If you're going to use canned, remember that they are softer, and you need to have a couple of cans because you've got the weight of the juice, and you want to rinse beans off. You want to rinse canned beans. Well, you want to rinse even the dried beans off. You know, people say to look for stones and stuff in beans. I haven't found that to be true in the States, but you should look at it anyway. Make sure there's not anything icky in there. But you need to rinse the dry ones off, but you must also rinse the canned ones off because you've got, well, this is not very nice to say, but you know that the juice around beans is kind of slime. Yeah, you don't want that in your dish. Rinse them off real nice. Get rid of any of the skins and pat them dry. Yeah, so they're all nice and rinsed. If you're using dried beans, they're all nice and rinsed also and all clean and everything. Let's use 3 pounds of cooked ham that we're going to cube. Mm-hmm. I don't recommend bacon in this. Ham is better. 3 pounds of cooked ham. We're going to cube it kind of small. 4 cups of water. I actually like beef stock better, but it makes it a little bit saltier, so you have to think about that. But I like beef stock. And you know what? Let's give it 5 cups of liquid beef stock, I'm going to say. And let's put a bay leaf in. And 2 cups of rice, regular long grain type rice, because we're going to cook it in with the liquid. Mm-hmm. So we're going to heat the oil up, of course. We're going to add our celery and our onion and our peppers, and we're going to cook it until everything is cooked, until the onion is golden, the peppers are softish. It takes about, 10 minutes. We're going to add the garlic, mix it all around, cook it another minute. Ah, excellent. Now we're going to add our ham. We're going to add our liquid, our bay leaf, and our celery. We're going to heat it up real nice and high. If we're using raw beans, put it in that raw black-eyed peas. Yeah, you can use any kind of beans. You can use kidney beans or whatever. It's just that the black-eyed peas are so pretty with the ham because they're kind of light in color and they're delicious. Yeah. And we're going to to bring this to a boil. Reduce the heat and simmer it until the black-eyed peas are tender. Mm-hmm. Takes about 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. It is, if you've got raw peas, raw black-eyed peas, immediately you put it in. If you've got canned ones towards the end, because they're already cooked, yeah. And we want to incorporate them, but we don't want to turn them to mush. So, because really what we're cooking is the vegetables and we're simmering. The ham's pretty tough even though it's probably was cooked. You can use, ham is inherently kind of cooked, really, because it's been cured. So, yeah, you put that in with the cubes. You put in the beans originally if they are hard and towards the end if they are soft. Simmer the whole thing. Remember to pull out the bay leaf. The rice we're going to make separately because we're going to put this delicious, kind of like a stew, really, over the rice. Yummy. Rice to the side. I actually, surprisingly enough, like a brown rice with this because it is a little denser, a little more nutty tasting. Mm-hmm. So we've made our black-eyed peas and ham, almost like a stew, really. Mm-hmm. It's not very hard to do. Sauteed everything. Then put the broth in, boiled it, simmered it, stirred it occasionally just to make sure that everything was getting incorporated. Mm-hmm. Peas, the black-eyed beans in the front, if the beginning, if they're raw, If they're not at the end, pat them dry, make the rice separate, serve it over rice, delicious. Why is this our adventure recipe? Because of the pork. Because not everybody eats pork. And yes, people are asking about all kinds of different kinds of beans. Whatever is firm, I think that kidney beans also look very nice in this and are very delicious. Mm-hmm. Something very, very small might turn kind of mushy, and you've got the peppers and things in there, so you have to look at it and go, well, it has to... You know, you eat with your eyes, really, before you eat with your stomach, and this will smell really nice and be delicious. Mm-hmm. You eat with your nose, too, I guess. So, I see our time together is nearly up. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you to the returning people. Thank you for all of your participation. Welcome to the new ones. Please come again, everyone. If you would like to contact us, I see your time is nearly up. That went fast. If you'd like to contact us, we are recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. I hope you learned something. I always do. Thank you for coming. Please do come again. And bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.